It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, welcome back to Money for Lunch. I'm just excited. I'm telling you, it's just a fantastic time of the year. It's not too cold, you know, depending on where you live. I know in some of these colder states, they're probably a lot colder than we are here in Arizona, but it's still not too cold. You know, I mean, it's not that painful level of cold yet. You know it's not too cold when the tourists aren't coming in to ski in your backyard. So until the snowbirds start showing up, then you really, it's not bad. There's probably still some grass available. Anyway, great show, I'm telling you. We have one of our regular contributors on the show today, Mary Keene Esquire. She is the IRS problem-solving attorney. I just love that. James Reardon, he's on the show. He's an innovator and product designer. George Mann, immigration attorney on the show. Going to be interesting to find out his thoughts on our crazy immigration stuff. I guess politics, laws, rules. Doug Jamieson, he's on the show as well. He's the CEO of Harris & Harris Group, a publicly traded venture capital firm, and it's traded on the NASDAQ. That's kind of rare for a venture capital firm. And then last but not least, we have Michael A. Smith, MD. He's a senior health scientist from lifeextension.com. Always good to have Michael Smith on the show. We're going to be talking about supplements. You hear that you should take supplements, but, you know, there's a lot of crap out there. Anyway, let's get this party started. My first guest is Mary Esquire. As I mentioned earlier, did I just say Mary Esquire? Let's try that again. My first guest is Mary King. She's an attorney, and as I mentioned earlier, she's the IRS problem-solving attorney. She's also the co-author of the best-selling book, Protect and Defend. Mary's career as an attorney began in 1993 after graduating from Stetson University College of Law. Her career in law has primarily focused in IRS problem solving as well as mortgage foreclosure defense. Mary has been practicing law for 19 years and enjoys helping her clients from removing the dark cloud of the IRS. As always, Mary Esquire, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Great to be here, as always.
Absolutely. All right, I want to dive into this. You know, it's still... You know, I know people are just focused on the end of the year stuff and the holidays, but, you know, before we know it, the tax season will soon be upon us. Let me ask you this. What are the expiring tax provisions that could affect taxpayers next year?
Well, there's a couple of them, actually. One of the biggest one is the Home Mortgage Debt Forgiveness Relief Act. As people may recall, for people who were foreclosed on or did deeds in lieu and so forth, Congress had said that if they had that debt discharged before January 1st of 2014, they could exclude up to $2 million of mortgage debt that was forgiven. So that act is slated to expire.
Gotcha. And they could exclude up to $2 million of tax debt. Walk me through this. So if I had a mortgage and it was, let's say, whatever, $1 million mortgage, and if I defaulted on it, I could have this forgiven. Walk me through this.
Exactly. It could be forgiven. Because what happens is, let's say that you have any kind of debt, whether it's credit card debt, mortgage debt, when you put that on your tax return, that is considered income to you. And so
forgiven,
tax,
you're saying that the debt that is forgiven becomes income.
Correct. And a lot of people
Wow.
don't realize that. So under this act, that debt would not be considered income.
Gotcha. All right.
So that act is slated to, as I said, it's slated to expire as of January 1st, 2014. So then
Wow.
starting in 2014, then those mortgage debts that are forgiven would again become income.
Gotcha. So, okay, so at this point, what do you do? If you had some debt that is forgiven this year, some mortgage debt that is forgiven this year, since it's happening in 2013, it doesn't affect, it only affects those mortgages that are forgiven in 2014 and on, right?
Correct. Unless, of course, Congress decides to continue that provision.
Right, of course. Right. All right.
Which we won't know.
That's right. We never know what those rascally rabbits are going to do up there.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so let's talk about this. How may sticker shock affect our tax return in 2013?
Well, this is another interesting one. People may not realize, but that in their payroll, there's increased payroll taxes for high-earning workers and self-employed taxes. So for people who make in excess of $250,000 for joint returns, there's going to be an additional payroll tax. There's also a surtax on unearned income. There's also higher income tax rates for most people, as there was in 2012. However, in 2013, people who have joint filers, there's going to be a 39.6% income tax rate for people who are joint filers that have income in excess of $450,000.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha.
You know, they are taxing people who are having higher incomes.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. I want you to clarify this, because you mentioned that there's a tax for unearned income.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through this. What does that mean exactly? Because if it's unearned, why am I being taxed on this income?
Well, it includes, for instance, like tax on interest on tax-exempt bonds, veterans benefits.
Gotcha.
That kind of thing.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Now I'm clear. Okay. Yeah. Clear as mud. No, I got it. I understand now. All right. Well, let's talk about this. What is this new fast-track settlement program for small businesses under audit? What does this mean for these small businesses?
Well, for instance, usually audits can take quite a long time to resolve. When you're under audit, you know, the for instance, if you have a revenue officer that's appointed to your case, can take months to, or even years to resolve. The revenue officers obviously don't like it to take that long, but it can take that long. This
sure.
new process is supposed to take up within 60 days. And the good part about it is that the taxpayers don't lose their right to appeal. So let's say that something happens during the audit process, they don't agree with something that the revenue officer does, they can still appeal a decision to the appeals division of the IRS.
Gotcha. And let me ask you this, why can it take so long? Why do these audits, you know, become so protracted?
Well, what usually happens is during an audit, the business or the taxpayer will get a notice stating that the IRS wants to audit their records. And it will say, please contact us within the next, you know, 10 days to set up an appointment. And then the taxpayer, the business, will do it. And then, for instance, if they get an attorney or an accountant involved, the attorney and accountant will say, oh, you know, we really need an extra X amount of time to get the records. And so then it becomes another 20 to 30 days. And
right.
then they have one appointment, and the auditor may look at the records and say, you know, we really need to examine, you know, some more records, or they may pick up another couple of years. And so then it'll be there'll be another appointment 30 days down the line. And then at that point, the auditor will either say, yes, we have all the records to prepare our report, or they may say, you know what, we need some more records, and then we're 30 more days down the road. And that's the way it usually works. It's, you know, 30 more days, 30 more days.
So what you're saying is, I mean, something that maybe in theory could be solved fairly soon, all of a sudden, as you just demonstrated, can really be extended depending on the attorney schedule, the documents that they want. Everything is put off another 30 days, and before you know it, a year has gone by, 2 years have gone by. That's incredible to me.
Well, it is, but it also depends, too, on how cooperative the taxpayer is in getting the records together and if they even have the records available.
Yeah, that's always the fun thing, isn't it? What records? I didn't know I was supposed to keep those records.
Exactly. You know, sometimes, and this is often the case, sometimes the taxpayer doesn't have the records available.
Gotcha. All right. What are the IRS plans to step up small business audits? What's happening there?
Well, it came out recently, this month even, that the Internal Revenue Service has stated that they are going to move from focusing on audits of small corporation to focusing on partnerships. And they said that this is just part of their overall strategy, that they are going to start looking more closely at what they consider to be pass-through entities, meaning entities that pass income through from entities to individuals. They believe that in the grand scheme of things, these entities make up about 95% of all U.S. businesses. So it's a pretty significant portion of the economy.
Yeah. Okay, so partnerships are going to be the new focus for the IRS, at least for the future, current,
correct.
I guess, for the next short while. So
right.
All you professional entities out there who have the LLP type stuff, right? The partnerships and limited partnerships, you guys are going to go under the microscope of the IRS, is what you're saying.
Well, any kind of business entity or business structure that would be considered a pass-through entity where the income is passed through to the individual, correct.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let me ask you this. On the IRS, website, I saw something the other day about the latest scam targeting individuals with IRS problems. Give me a bird's eye view of what's happening here.
Well, this is sort of interesting, and we've actually seen some of these from people who've come into my office. Apparently, there is a scam where individuals are actually calling IRS potential clients, and they're claiming to be from the IRS, and they're telling them that they owe taxes and they have to pay using a prepaid debit card or a wire transfer, and they're actually threatening these people that they're going to be arrested or they're going to be deported, they're going to lose their business license or their driver's license, and they're actually, using fake IRS identification numbers.
Wow.
It's pretty serious, and the calls are very threatening and scary to people.
Here's
the thing. I mean, the IRS, as a general rule, they don't. Sometimes they call. As a general rule, they don't, and they never will email you. So if you get an email from the IRS, don't ever respond to that. Well, I should say
right. You, we know that's bogus.
But as a general rule, that's not going to be from the IRS because most times, 9 times out of 10, the IRS sends letters. And so I, if you ever got an email from the IRS, I would definitely contact the IRS to find out for sure if it really was from the IRS.
Yeah. It's amazing, too. how many of these people, and intelligent people, fall for these kind of scams. You know,
right.
I mean, you know, bottom line is if you're getting a call from the IRS, supposedly, or a collection agency, and they're threatening you with arrest, that's just not the way it works. I mean, there is this, you know, the IRS or the division that can actually arrest you. But you can be arrested for not paying your taxes, but there's due process.
Right,
you know,
right.
And believe me, you're going to know, you're going to know way ahead of time simply because, you know, if you are in that much trouble with the IRS or any government agency, you're going to have a bunch of paper sent to you and some of it certified, right?
Yes, and they won't ask for a credit card number over the phone. You know, they are going to send you letters. They are going to send you certified letters. Certainly before it ever got to the point where, you know, something serious like, you know, arrest or levies on your property or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, it's not going to be wham, bam kind of a thing. It's just not the way they work. All right. Well, you know what? And it's, like I said, it just amazes me that that this happens. And, of course, they're probably targeting people that don't know any better. You mentioned, you know, threatening them with deportation, which leads me to believe, you know, they're fairly new to the country, don't know what their rights are. And you know, if you come from a hostile government, a country that has a government that may be oppressive, then they don't know any better. They may pay before they really check into it. Let me ask you this. If somebody gets one of these calls or they get, quote, an email that's demanding money, what's the best thing to do? Just contact the IRS or do you contact the FBI? What's your take on this?
They should definitely contact the IRS and find out for sure if they do have a tax issue. The IRS wants to get these emails. They can send them to the IRS. Because
right.
The IRS wants to know that people are actually, you know, sending out these fake emails. And, you know, they should obviously know if they do have a tax problem. But they can forward these scam emails to the IRS at this email. It's called phishing, you know, with a PH, at irs.gov.
Right.
And, you know, you shouldn't open any attachments or click on any links because, you know, they could have viruses in them. But, you know, if people call and they claim to be from the IRS and they're asking for any, you know, personal email, you know, I would call the IRS back so that you know who you're talking to.
Right. And don't get a phone number from these people. Call the IRS back at their regular 800 number that's posted on their website so you know it's going directly to the IRS and not part of the scam.
Exactly.
Mary, thank you so much for stopping by. As always, it's great information, and I thoroughly appreciate your insights and your strategies, but we're out of time.
Well, it was great being here. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Mary King, she is the king of solving your IRS problems. That's it. This is as funny as I get. So, guys, if you have questions about your IRS, if you think you're being scammed, if you want to know about your rights as far as your settlement programs or your audits, whether it's a personal audit or a business audit, check out Mary King and her team at TaxLawyerFlorida.com, TaxLawyerFlorida.com. Mary King, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You bet. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by our regular contributor Mary King. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick.
Oh, yeah.
Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing.
I resist.
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
And we're going to be talking to Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman is a highly recognized and awarded businessman, and he's got a very interesting story. I want you guys to listen to this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bert, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, I know a lot of our listeners may not have heard your story, so before we get into it, and we're going to be talking about how to get out of credit card debt quickly, but before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story.
Well, certainly, and I guess we could start with the old standard rags to riches, but everybody's heard those stories so many times they're almost like chopped liver anymore. So we don't call mine rags to riches, more like rats to riches. We grew up in a neighborhood where there were more rats per capita than there were people. But from there, fortunately, even though I was a high school dropout, spent 5.5 years in high school, I was an alcoholic by the time I was 17, I'm essentially deaf and wear hearing aids to hear about half of what goes on around about me, and grew up on welfare and poverty and left home when I was 14, I managed to finally get my boat righted, as they would call it, and honestly, Bert, it happened because I met the woman of my life, the lady I met when I was 14 and she was 11. We dated for 10 years, and we've been married now for 36, and I give her all the credit in the world for kicking my rump, so to speak, back to the system. I got a GED. With my GED, I managed to get into college on probation, graduated on probation 4 years later, got into law school on probation, flunked out, got back in, finally graduated on probation, and with that, where Kathy and I have, over the course of our life, we've been blessed and fortunate that we've been able to have some pretty significant business success. In 1986, we went broke. I live in Oklahoma, and we were in the oil and gas business, and the price of oil went from $40 a barrel down to $14, and we went flat, bankrupt, broke, and from there we saw an opportunity, the same opportunity that's going on right now. We saw the economy being in the tank. We saw massive numbers of people being unemployed and banks failing, and so we started buying bad debt. We started buying charged-off credit cards for literally a nickel on the dollar, and with that, over the next 12 years, we created a billion-dollar company. Kathy and I became the 25th wealthiest people in America, members of the Forbes 400, and fortunately, we have won a whole list of business awards, none of which will buy you a cup of coffee anywhere, but they're real pretty when they hang on the wall.
Well, you know, it's good to be recognized by your peers. I think it does say a little bit, but you're right. When it comes down to it, it doesn't buy a cup of coffee. So tell us, Bill, you went from literally from rats to riches, as you like to say. You've been married to Kathy for 36 years?
36, yeah, which means she had to get a Purple Heart or something.
That's right. Well, you know what? I think it's kind of cool that you give her all the credit. That is an amazing thing, how women can affect us.
Oh, absolutely, Bert. You know, and it's so understated. I mean, you know, the old adage of behind every successful man, there's a woman. Well, that is so much baloney. Kathy has never been behind me. She's never been in front of me. She's always been alongside of me. And people who have great relationships, those are the ones who more often than not are the ones who are great successes in life. So isn't there a lesson there? You know, get a relationship, keep a relationship, work a relationship, and then maybe the rest of your life will fall in place.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's very difficult to have success outside if you're not having success inside the home.
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
All right, well, let's get to it. Tell us about how to get out of credit card debt quickly.
Well, here is the quickest way possible, and it kind of rubs against the norm, and I don't want people to think I'm preaching some kind of financial anarchy or something when I tell them that. But remember now, the business that we created was buying charged-off credit cards, and we bought 4.5 million individual accounts, so I have some background here. What I'm suggesting for people who are so far underwater that they can't see out, and, you know, that has a different definition for different people, but if you look at your own finances and say, at the job I have right now, at the way things are going, I am so far in. It doesn't matter how you got there. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. But if that's where you're at, you have to look at some pretty extraordinary situations to get out of the hole you're in. And one of the things you can do is, and here it comes, quit paying your credit card bills. Now, when you quit paying your credit card bills, it will hurt your credit rating. Oh, boy, there it is almost an immediate thing. But the truth of the matter is, Bert, if somebody's that far upside down, they already have hurt their own credit rating. And so one more little ding on it isn't probably going to make a big difference to them. Now, conversely, if your credit is good, you'd never want to do this. But if your credit's already been shot, if you quit paying your credit card bills, here's what happens. And you will get some phone calls. You'll get collectors calling you. But if you just keep saying no, after 180 days, the credit card company, the bank, has to charge off the debt. That's a rule. That's a law, actually. That's a GAAP accounting rule. And the bank will charge off the debt and then sells those loans, those credit card debts, for as low as a nickel on the dollar to people like me. And when we buy them for a nickel on the dollar, we call up the same customer and we're prepared to settle for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. So a person who is, say, $10,000 in debt on their credit card right now and can't pay the 10 grand because they just don't have it, they might be able to settle with somebody for, say, $1,500. And the problem is the bank won't let them settle with the bank for $1,500. So that's the one thing they can do is nothing. Don't pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, eventually they will be sold off to someone else who will settle with you for pennies on the dollar.
Well, that's a great strategy. It's kind of like reverse leverage.
It is exactly that. You know, it's kind of the one step short of bankruptcy. You know, when you file bankruptcy because you're so far in you can't get back out, you know you're going to hurt your credit, but you also know you're going to effectuate a solution. You know you're going to make a whole bunch of that junk go away. Well, this is a half step. Now, it's certainly right in line with going bankrupt because it's heading down that path, but it may be the one thing that keeps you from filing bankruptcy, and it would be better to have one or two creditors messing up your credit score as wiping out all of them.
Right. Typically, bankruptcy, and I know the bankruptcy law has changed and maybe you don't know the answer, but typically bankruptcy tends to stay on your credit for, what is it now, 7 or 10 years?
It is as long as 10 years that it will continue to show up or haunt you, as they say. And yes, I'm familiar with that. In 1986, we filed bankruptcy. So I know again from experience that that is the last straw, last resort, and I don't encourage people to do it unless they just absolutely can't take care of their family, can't take care of their other obligations. There is a higher sense of order here, and that's why the bankruptcy rules were created. You know, not for you to let people run up bills and just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just walk away from it. No, it's for good, honest, serious, legitimate people who find themselves in a place they never would have imagined.
Sure. And you know, the thing that you just hit on there that people don't realize is that when you start believing that it'll never happen to you, that's when it happens to you.
Oh, and right now, Bert, it's happening to people who have never, ever imagined it can happen to them. See, in the old days, a few years ago, we used to think that people with credit card problems and the people who would think about bankruptcy, well, those are, you know, we would kind of put them in that, well, they must be lazy or they must not have gotten a good education or they probably didn't work very hard. And we kind of put them all in a little category, rightly or wrongly. That's kind of the way we do things. But this time around, in this great recession we're in right now, there are people who did it by the rules. They went to school, they studied hard, they got good grades, they went and got a job, they showed up for work every single day of their life, they went and bought a house with a white picket fence, they married the girl next door, they followed every single rule to follow the American dream, and it turned out that maybe some of that wasn't as true as they told us. And now these are people who have never failed before, have never had difficulties before, and now they're unemployed and not able to pay their bills.
You know, something that you just brought up, I think that this generation is one of those generations that hasn't been tested. This economy is their first test.
It is indeed, and I feel so bad for the people going through what they're going through right now. Now, a guy like me, I'm 61 years old, and I have failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded, and I have screwed up so many times it's almost pathetic. I'm good at failure. I'm good at screwing up. I'm good at getting knocked down and figuring out how to get back up because I've done it a lot. Now, people who have never had it happen to them, it is the most traumatic thing they may experience in their entire lifetime. And quite frankly, some of them may not know how to deal with it.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is failure is a good way to succeed.
It is the only way to succeed. And here's a challenge I give everybody on this call. The Forbes 400 is a list that's published every October by Forbes magazine, so you can go online and get it or wherever you might choose to read it. And read the stories of the people who are on the Forbes 400 list. And except for a few people who inherited some money, and there's usually a handful of them on there, the ones who are self-made, every one of them failed at least once. Some of them failed a half a dozen times. Some of them have filed bankruptcy three or four times in their life. And that's what it almost takes failure to succeed.
Well, you know, Walt Disney, I believe, filed bankruptcy four
Indeed.
Or five times.
Indeed.
And on top of that, his best friend, which is the famous Art Linkletter, you know, gave up on him, wouldn't lend him the $1,000 he needed to buy what is now Walt Disney in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm. No, but, I mean, the stories are, you know, I mean, they're by the thousands. So, you know, when I started, I'm a student of this industry because I try to share what it is I've learned along the way. The very reason you and I are on this call today is hoping that maybe somebody will hear something that might have some value in their life. Well, I began looking at all of the reasons people succeed and the reasons people fail, and I found an awful lot of correlation between having failed and learning a lesson and then going to a much higher success than you ever would have been able to go to but for the failure.
Absolutely. Bill Bartman, thank you very much. This is Bert Martinez. Thank you.
And Bert, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Hey guys, we are back. My next guest, George Mann. George Mann is an immigration attorney. George P. Mann has been practicing immigration and nationality law exclusively for 34 years. has assisted thousands of immigrants from all over the world with just about every conceivable legal challenge. His connection with his work goes deep. He is a former refugee from communist Romania, a son of a Holocaust survivor, and have lived in immigrant experience. And has lived the immigrant experience. He believes the U.S. is the world's leading country because its principality, a country of immigrants and their descendants. George P. Mann, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, let's talk about this. You know, both you and I have lived the immigration experience. I came to this country at a very young age, and I remember spending hours in the, you know, in you know, downtown at the immigration line, and that's what you did, and you had to check in every few years and update your photo and stuff like that till you became a citizen. What's your take on the immigration reform? Excuse me. Are we, you know, is it a priority? Do you see that immigration reform as a priority to our current administration?
Well, there is a lot of people that are affected negatively by the fact that we have really neglected our immigration system, and times have passed us by, and that comprises a large number of employers who rely on immigrants, whether on a temporary basis, such as farmers and people who have need of seasonal workers, like hotels that operate in the summer, and landscaping businesses and businesses such as golf courses and others that need seasonal help. And then you have people like Microsoft and leading high-tech companies that are constantly combing the world for the, you know, the smartest people out there to keep us as the leading source of innovations in the world. And then you have family situations, people trying to bring family members, spouses, children, parents, et cetera. And then you have issues that people are here already, they want to stay, or they have problems in getting their citizenship. And we have a situation where a lot of these issues cannot be resolved because the legal structure that we have now is not really in tune with current conditions. I mean, this is not right. The only area of government where this happens, but certainly is a main one. And, you know, we have millions and millions. Just to speak of one thing, we have 11 million people, some people say more than that, who are basically living under the radar, you know, in the shadows.
Right.
And many of them are, contributing to the country. Most of them are, and most of them
sure.
came here just looking for opportunities. So,
Let me ask you this. I mean, here you are. You have 34 years of dealing exclusively with nationality law and immigration law. And we're having all these problems with, you know, with the undocumented worker or the illegal immigrants, whatever you want to call them. And we also have the issues with all these terrorists who absolutely want to do us bad. Why should we continue to accept immigrants? What's your thinking?
Well, you know, I mean, immigrants is what made us who we are and have made us the country that really leads the world in many fields, in most fields of human endeavor, for that matter. How can a country that only has less than 5% of the world's population have so much influence on the world? There are other nations around that have several times our population, China, India, and others, you know, that... And it is people often ask me, what is so special about the U.S.? Well, the only thing that's special about the U.S. is that it's a country of immigrants. There's no other country. There's a few countries that are much smaller in size, like Canada or Australia, that also are largely countries of immigrants. But they're just too small. Canada's population
right.
is only... one-tenth the U.S. population, and Australia is even less. So the U.S., what is unique about the U.S. is we are a country of immigrants, and that's what has made us who we are. So we can't deny who we are. We have to understand ourselves.
Right.
Let
me ask you this, okay?
Really,
Let me ask you this, because, again, you have this unique experience, just like I do, of coming from another country, and you probably understand this better than most. How do other countries deal with these issues that we have?
Well, there are some countries that are more successful in dealing with the immigration issues than we are. Part of it is, of course, their problems are much more manageable in size. I just happened to mention Canada and Australia. Both these countries have problems with immigration issues. You know, for instance, Australia is constantly struggling with boat people trying to reach their shores, refugees and so on, and they want to obviously want to have some control about the flow of people seeking refuge and so on, and they are stopping boats, leaky boats on the high seas, and you know, have to deal with people in distress and people dying out there, but they manage better their the ability of their country to bring in the people that they need.
Right.
Canada is way ahead in that. Their immigration system is more efficient. Is giving it is possible to bring employers, you know, high tech companies and others. They have a more streamlined system. And legislative proposals that are in front of Congress right now have some of those insights and better systems of processing, selecting, and allowing people to come into the U.S. than we have at current. For instance, to just give you one example, H-1B is the visa for professionals, and we have a ceiling on it about 60,000, and with some exceptions, and it is grossly inadequate to the needs of industry. And of course, you know, there are different people who are saying we shouldn't be bringing people like that because when they have high unemployment and so on. But the fact of the matter is that there are thousands of jobs available that we just don't have the people for them.
Well, you know what?
Issue of contention.
Right, and people don't understand this, that if we had the workers here and we had the talent here, then we would not be going outside of our country to get more talent. So when you have these corporations that try to acquire talent outside the U.S. is because they've exhausted searching in the U.S. They haven't found anybody. That's number one. So they're not, you're not losing a job. You just never had that job because you weren't part of that talent pool. That's number one. Number two, it's not cheaper for the employer. It's more expensive because they have to hire somebody like you to help them through this process, and they have to pay market rate for that talent outside of the U.S. They're not getting them cheaper. They have to pay whatever the market is worth. So if the market is $150,000 a year, that immigrant worker was going to come over here, or that immigrant talent is going to come over here at roughly $150,000 a year.
There's something even more silly that we are doing that we shouldn't be doing. First of all, as you know, we have the best universities in the world, and if you check the graduate schools, let's say for engineering colleges around the country, you will find that in almost all the graduate programs in engineering colleges, the vast majority of students are foreign students. So our universities, because of their outstanding reputation, are attracting the best and brightest minds in the world, technical minds, in the STEM,
right.
Technical fields. And we throw these people away instead of welcoming them after they graduate and give them a chance to easily be able to stay here. We're losing a lot of this great talent that we ourselves have nurtured. Because we don't have a well organized and well conceived system to help us. We're shooting ourselves in the foot, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's just one example, you know. And so
right.
I'm not even speaking about the human issues, you know, of or the because of the way our system has evolved. It's very harsh, and we are, you know, creating a lot of breaking up thousands of families every day by sending spouses, deporting spouses and leaving behind spouses. The other spouse might be a U.S. citizen or a legal resident here with children and so on. And we don't have a good mechanism for allowing, for avoiding many of these tragic situations. And all over the country, since we are deporting about 400,000 people a year, we're creating on a daily basis, you know, trauma and suffering for families, you know, and then for children.
Yeah.
That are American citizens or legal residents. And this also is because of we don't have the right, the legal system does, which was certain rules that were created to discourage people from coming here illegally or staying illegally have resulted in this type of situation where people are able to stay here legally for years during that time, illegally for years during that time they start families, children, spouses, and so on. And then when we find them, you know, years later, there's no solution available for them.
And it's
heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
It is
so
heartbreaking.
That's
you know what? And bottom line is, you know, you and I both understand that, you know, living in America is a great privilege. It's wonderful to be able to come here and to work hard and to be able to be successful and to do what you want. There are so many freedoms and liberties that America has. And I think that, you know, people need to wake up and realize that the immigration, that the immigrants coming to our country is never going to stop, period. It's never going to stop. The question is, how do we make it so it can help us? And, you know, a lot of these politicians and a lot of these right-wing conservatives use fear to try to get their message across. And the fear is that these guys are taking jobs from us. And, again, that's never been true. You know, I don't know anybody, you know, that wants to do some of the labor that some of these great people do, you know, when they come here from these different countries, and they spend, you know, 10, 12 hours a day working in these farmlands. We want the food, and we don't want, you know, and we've evolved. We no longer want to do that kind of work, but yet we're going to sit here and complain and moan and gripe and kick people out that are hardworking people just trying to do what we're all trying to do, which is take care of our family, you know, save some money for the future. And, you know, and I think that the way I see it, George, is that our immigration problem, I think can be solved very easily by doing more with a work permit program where people are allowed to come in and they get an ID, they pay taxes, they're not afraid to buy a car, they're not afraid to pay insurance. You know, they can start adding billions of dollars into our economy because they're here legally just to work. Doesn't mean that they're going to stay here forever, but they can come in, they can stay here and maybe work for 3 or 4 years, save a bunch of money. They can hire somebody like yourself or some other attorney to help them help these documented workers become permanent citizens or permanent residents. And as you know, that can take years. So this guy can be here legally working, helping our economy, helping out his family, and it's a win-win for everybody.
Yes, absolutely. And I think eventually it will have – reality will catch up, hopefully, with our leaders, you know, the people we voted to take responsibility for you know, creating these solutions. I mean, what needs to be done is known, and the benefits making our system a more flexible and more intelligent system are known. Yes. I mean, there are studies after studies, and whether it's in private industry, like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and you know, the budget people in the government, I mean, everybody knows the immense benefits that would come if our system, immigration system, was brought up to date to handle the reality that we are facing today. I mean, as with everything
right.
else.
Hey, George,
I mean,
George,
I'm, you know?
We're out of time, George. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Right.
Great
sure.
conversation.
My
Look
pleasure.
Forward to having you back another time. Bye-bye.
All right.
Guys, we're
pleasure.
Off and running.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff there by immigrant attorney George P. Mann. I kind of went over the time there. You know, what can I say? As an immigrant, I become passionate about immigrant causes. We're going to take a very short commercial break, and we'll be right back with Doug Jamison, right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, Chairman and CEO of Harris & Harris Group, a publicly traded venture capital firm listed on NASDAQ as Tiny, Doug Jamison. Welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so here it is. Harris & Harris Group is a 30-year-old publicly traded venture capital firm. Give me a brief history of about the company, what motivated you guys to go public, and kind of what you guys do as a venture capital firm.
Certainly. So we completed an IPO in 1983, since that period of time, made venture capital investments. So these are technology investments in very early stage companies, often spun out of universities or research centers. And then we work with the managements to help build those companies and then exit them, usually through an acquisition of the company or through the initial public offering or the IPO process. You know, we've been around for 30 years. We've been making these investments for 30 years. We actually, the current team that's here has been here since 2002 when we focused the company investing on companies that were enabled at the nanoscale or micro scale. You know, since that time, we've grown our net assets from under $25 million to an excess of $130 million. And, we currently have about $45 million in cash and secondary liquidity.
Gotcha. All right, so you guys tend to be in primarily the tech and biotech area?
That is correct. So we're in the deep technology sector. So, again, we don't invest in areas like the internet, social media, tech areas like that. We tend to invest in healthcare. And the life sciences, so that includes industrial biotechnology and agriculture. We also invest in energy, and traditionally we've invested in electronics and semiconductors as well.
Gotcha. All right, let me ask you this. What do you see right now? What are you guys seeing trending for 2014?
Well, our big focus going forward is in what we call Biology Plus. And Biology Plus is investing at the intersection of different disciplines, where biology is one of those disciplines. The other areas of those disciplines could be engineering. They could be mathematics, physics, chemistry, information technology. And we think that intersection of these different technologies is a trend that's going to go much beyond 2014, but over the next decade. And again, as an early stage venture investor, what we pride ourselves on is we pride ourselves on finding market trends really 5 to 7 years before the public really identifies these trends or even gets interested in them. And that's because it takes that much time to build these companies so that they have something of interest as the market trends towards their interest area. So again, we look forward. We think one of the most exciting areas of technology is at the intersection of these different disciplines. It's a direction that the academic research labs have been going in for a long time. It's really one of the things we found from investing in nanotechnology, that a lot of great technologies happen at that intersection. You saw it with some of the clean energy technologies where you were engineering organisms to produce oil for chemicals and for fuels. That's a great example of an intersection of biology into the energy markets.
Sure, sure. Let me ask you this, okay? When you guys are looking into a company to invest, I mean, obviously you just said, hey, you guys are long-term thinkers, you know, 5 to 7, 8 years ahead. So what other attributes do you look for when deciding to invest in a new company?
Oh, I think there's a few key attributes that we always look for when we go to build a company. The first attribute is to really look at technology that's coming out of a leading research institution from a leading researcher in a given field. That's really important. Usually that individual or group of researchers has been very successful at getting capital to do their research, at bringing great students into their labs, and of course is published in the best journals, so their work is highly credible. You know, the second thing we look for are big ideas, right? I think it was Jim Watson, one of the original discoverers of the structure of DNA, that said, you know, every problem turns out to be very, very difficult to solve. If you're going to actually be successful and solve a problem, because you're going to have a lot of failures, but if you're going to be successful, you might as well solve a problem that really matters. So we're looking for big problems, problems that have billion-dollar markets. You know, the other thing we're looking
you're looking to get involved in the next thing that cures cancer. That we're talking that big.
Yeah. So we had a company that called BioVex that we sold to Amgen in 2011 for up to $1 billion. That company, they had actually created an oncolytic virus, and an oncolytic virus is a virus that only targets and kills cancer cells. It leaves other cells unharmed. And they were bringing that to the clinic. Amgen is now bringing that to the clinic. They're finishing up phase 3 clinical trials for malignant melanoma or skin cancer. So we're looking for problems like that. One company in our portfolio currently has created really the world's first commercial quantum computer. And this really, a quantum computer is very different from the computers you think of today. And in fact, D-Wave, you know, with its next generation quantum computer, this quantum computer will have the computational power that's expected to surpass that of all computers combined on the face of Earth. So it's a very, very powerful computer that holds information in 2 states at once. If they are successful, and that's a big if,
that
can really change how we think of computing today and can create a very large market opportunity, of course, from which our investors can get returns.
I love it. Hey, Doug, we're out of time, and I'd love to have you back and spend and talk some more about what you guys are doing there at Harris & Harris, and I appreciate you stopping by and sharing some time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
You bet. Guys, we're off and running. My next guest is Dr. Michael Smith. He's a return guest, and we're going to be talking about this thing called supplements. And I'm excited to talk to him about this simply because, as you guys know, first of all, I love health and fitness. And second of all, most of us consume health. And Dr. Michael Smith, he is the senior health scientist from Life Extension. Kind of likes to call himself the country doctor with a city education. That's how Dr. Michael A. Smith
many devoted fans describe him, senior healthcare scientist and online personality for Life Extension, the world's leading organization dedicated to extending the healthy human lifespan. Dr. Smith, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
All righty. So let's talk about that. Do we really need supplements, first of all?
Yeah, what a great question, and I think the answer is pretty straightforward. We do need to supplement our diet every day, and let me give you the reasons. There's two ways to look at this. There's the negative reasons, and then there's the positive reasons for supplementation. The negative reasons have to do with the fact that our food chain is just so unhealthy today. When you think about the conditions of our soils, it was noted back in the 1920s. That our soils were not producing healthy foods or nutritious foods anymore. And what's been done since the 1920s, which was the first soil surveys we did, pretty much nothing. After the Dust Bowl that occurred in the 20s and 30s, some farmers planted soy, which was a good thing because it's a nitrogen-fixing plant and that's good for the soils. But that's about it. Nothing's been done for many, many years. And so we continue to unfortunately grow and produce fruits and vegetables that just aren't as nutritious as they used to be. And then other negative things for supplementation, you got to add in the toxins. The EPA allows about 1,000 new industrial toxins into our environment every single year. You probably in your own home right now probably have 1,000 or so different toxins floating around your hairs, gel, your deodorants. You know, it goes on and on. We have air fresheners. So, you know, we're swimming in toxins in our bodies. We're never meant to deal with that level of toxicity. And then, of course, the last one is the chronic stress that we deal with today, unlike any other time
stress.
Ever. Yeah, you think so a little bit? You know,
I was not aware that we were under any kind of stress. I just thought that
Doing great then. Maybe you're the one person that doesn't need the supplements. I don't know, but I know I live in a constant 24-hour information, world, and you know our stress systems in our bodies were really meant to deal with acute stress, but we're all dealing with more chronic things, unfortunately. So those are the negative reasons that we need supplements, right? You got the soils,
right.
The toxins, the stress. The positive reason, and this is where I kind of like once, and I don't think I really have any problem convincing people of those negative things. I think we all experience that. We see that. That's easy to do. The real issue for me, and this is the educational opportunity here, is the positive reasons for supplements. And the big one here has to do with what I coined the ideal dosing of supplements. And what that means is when you do look at good food, let's say you are buying your fruits and vegetables from a local farmer and it's organic and you know you're doing the best thing that you can do, even in a best case scenario, that tomato you're eating or that orange that you're eating, they're going to supply you with just enough vitamins and minerals to make sure you don't get deficiencies. Matter of fact, most of our multivitamins on the market today are formulated around what's called the recommended daily allowance or intake, and that's based on dosing that keeps you from getting deficiencies. It has nothing to do with benefiting from all the other things these vitamins and minerals can do. Let me give you an example. The recommended daily allowance of vitamin C, which you might get in a good organically grown orange, is about 25 to 50 milligrams. Now, that's awesome if you don't want to get scurvy. However, when you look at all the different things attributed to vitamin C, healthy heart, healthy immune system, anti-cancer properties, and you look at the doses that are used in those studies to come up with those benefits, you're talking about 2,000 milligrams a day. So what I think a very important positive reason for supplements would be to get those higher, more ideal doses, not just to prevent vitamin deficiency. So when you put all that together, the negative aspects and the positive aspect of ideal dosing, yes, supplementation on a daily basis, in my opinion, is absolutely necessary.
Sure, sure. And some of these supplements and minerals become diluted or we call it even eliminated because we drink water or Coke or caffeine, and throughout the day
Right. You
might have, you might take vitamin C, but every time you drink water, your
flushing it out of your system.
That's a good
right?
point. Yeah, no, and that's a good point. We always talk about you want to eat food that's less processed, right? Why do we say that? Because when you process something, you lose some of the nutrients. Well, guess what? Your body is the best processing unit that we have. So when you eat something in a raw form, your body naturally will break down some of those nutrients. You will lose some of that because you're processing it, you're digesting it. The absorption process, because you're trying to keep bugs and bad things out, will also eliminate some of those nutrients. So, again, it goes back to the fact that even if you're trying to do things right, because of the soils, because of the low dosing, because of the processing your own body does to these foods, again, yeah, you need to supplement if, and again, this is a big if now, if you're looking to take your health to that next level, if you just want to prevent scurvy, then fine. Don't worry about it. Eat an orange a day and you're going to be okay. But if you're talking about revving up your heart health, you're talking about anti-cancer properties, you're going to need to take a supplement that provides about 2 grams or 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C. There's no orange that's going to do that.
Right, right. All right, so let's talk about this, because there are like a billion, products out there just for vitamin C alone.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking to buy vitamin C or vitamin D, which I've heard is one of the big things nowadays, what
right.
do I look for? How do I tell a good supplement from a bad supplement?
Yeah, well, the first thing to do, we have to become smart consumers. Now, let me first tell you there's some simple things you can do, and then there's some things that may take a little bit more time, but I think it's worth it. The first thing that we all need to do is we need to stop looking at the front label of these products. That's all the marketing jargon, all the manufacturing claims. That doesn't say anything. That's just trying to get your attention. We need to turn that bottle around and look on the back label. So the first thing you want to look for is if you're wanting a vitamin D product, for instance, make sure it's clearly stated in the active ingredients part of the label, which comes first. It's the top part of the label. Make sure it says vitamin D. That's number one. And number two, make sure it is in that ideal range of dosing. Now, if you don't know the ideal range of dosing, you can contact Life Extension. Just go to lifeextension.com. On our website, we tell you all the ideal dosing. You can print that out. You go to your store, and you can compare what you're getting in that product versus what we consider to be ideal dosing. That's a simple thing that everybody can do. Now, here's the next level. And this is a lot of people, I say this, they're like, I'm not going to go through all that. But it's a simple thing, though. Every good company out there, okay, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot
right.
of really good companies that have been around for a long time. They produce for their products what is called a certificate of analysis. In the industry, it's called a C of A or a COA. Any good company that's been around and that really has your best interest in mind, not just profits, they will have on record a C of A for every single product with their label on it. What that means is a third party has gone in there, randomly pulled off a product, and tested it for the identity of the ingredients, for the purity, the dosing, and they confirm that what you're reading on the label is truly in that product. A C of A is a very easy way. You call the company up. Let's say you want to buy XYZ vitamin D, you call them up, usually there's a number on the back label, a manufacturing number, and you ask for that C of A. If they tell you they have no idea what you're talking about, hang up the phone and find another product, because every good company provides those C of A's. It sounds like an extra step, but my gosh, I was just out with a friend of mine who's buying a new cell phone. She's been looking at this stuff for months. Comparing rates, comparing battery life,
right.
doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, she's doing that for a cell phone, but I can't convince her to do it for a supplement that actually is impacting her health. So come on, we do it for other
right.
products. We can do this for supplements.
Sure, and I think that's a great demonstration there. It's obviously not important to her, or she would do it. It's important
right.
to me because, first of all, I spend thousands of dollars every year on supplements. The last thing I want to do is buy
exactly.
trash. And if somebody, another thing that I do, I did not know about the C of A, but what I do is I go to Google and I'll type in the brand's name, and then after the brand's name, I type in lawsuit or recall.
Yeah, very nice.
And so,
yeah, that's another good way to do it.
So
the AGs out there who sue these companies all the time because they're putting out phony products. If that brand pops up, then I can do some further research and see, you know, what did they get in trouble for? Was it because it's a bad product? Was it bad advertising? Whatever it was, and take it a step further. All right, so let me ask you this then, because we're really short here on time. I want you to quickly tell me what supplements are truly important, truly what you would say required.
Yeah. In my book that I just wrote, I call these the foundational supplements. I create regimens in the form of a pyramid for people. And what makes a pyramid strong? It's the foundation. That's why the Egyptian pyramids have lasted so long. So there's four key supplement products that everybody should be taking. The minute you're 18 years of age, all the way up to, you know, wherever, you know, 99, 100, however long you live. Four products, very simple. An ideally dosed multivitamin. Notice what I just said, ideally dosed multivitamin. I'm not talking about that standard over-marketed product that you can buy at your local convenience store or whatever that's based on the recommended daily intake so you don't get scurvy. I'm talking about ideally dosed multivitamin. Number two, we have to get between 2 to 4 grams of the omega-3 oils every day. That's your fish oils, your flaxseed oils, algae oils. It doesn't really matter where you get them from. Make sure you're getting 2 to 4 grams of omega-3 oils. They help everything from your brain down to your toenails. I mean, it's that simple. Number three, we got to take CoQ10. This is an energy molecule. Now, I'm not talking about like an energy drink where you're up and you're able to do all kinds of things all night long, play video games. No, that's not what I'm talking about. True energy has to do with the cell. And the cell makes energy. It makes an energy molecule called ATP. If you want to have true cellular energy that's lasting, that you don't get the crashes, you have to help the cell make more ATP. And that is what CoQ10 does. About 100 to 200 milligrams of a CoQ10 supplement every day is very important. And then lastly, has to do with your gut. You're only as healthy as your gut. If you can't digest food, if you can't absorb nutrients, and you can't eliminate waste, you're just not going to be that healthy. So a probiotic, that's a product that supplies your gut with healthy bacteria that are so essential to all of those steps in the digestive process. So there you go. Ideal dose multivitamin, omega-3s, CoQ10, probiotics. If we could get everybody in this country on those four products, we would solve the healthcare issue. We would be truly preventing disease. We'd save billions of dollars, and we would all have the best health insurance out there.
Dr. Michael Smith, thank you very much. I want to have you back and talk about your book. We'll talk to you later.
Sure. Thank you.
You bet. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there about your health, your energy, including your gut, in your mind, in your toes, and everything. Check out the Life Extension at lifeextension.com. Check out Dr. Michael Smith. And as always, thank you so much for stopping by. We'll talk to you later.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.